Hello, and welcome to Book City Roanoke. I'm Douglas Jackson, and today, for our fifth episode, I have with me Ashley Wilson Fellers. Ashley is a creative spirit here in town. She's a writer, she's also a photographer and a painter, and she's currently in a period of creative disruption, and we're going to hear about that today. Before we start our conversation, I want to talk a little bit about Book City Roanoke and just mention that you can find Our Things Literary at bookcityroanoke.com. And this is a local effort that's exploring equity and engagement at the intersection of books and place. And it's a local effort, but in these conversations, I think you'll hear, as I've been hearing, that the local is a great place to start to seek the universal. And our conversations this season are about the next chapter, books, writing, and the personal renaissance. And when I've mentioned this topic to people, people's eyes kind of lit up and said, yes, I have something to say about that. And they have. We do have a sponsor for the program, and that is Book No Further, down on Roanoke's historic city market. And Dolores Vest, the proprietor there, does a terrific job of promoting local authors and putting just the right book in your hand. And with that, I want to say welcome.
Hi.
I'm glad you're going to spend a little bit of time with me today.
I am super excited to be here.
Well, let's dive right into it. When I mentioned this theme kind of on personal transformation or the personal renaissance, what came to mind?
Oh, gosh. So I'm right in the middle of what we could call personal renaissance. And I think I told you earlier, if I think about the word renaissance, that's the word renaissance, right? So rebirth. And that's something I've been thinking a lot about lately. And as a girl raised in the church, I can't help but go to the Gospel of John. There's a story about Nicodemus coming to Jesus and saying, you know, how can a man be born again? Is he supposed to enter his mother's womb a second time? It's a weird question, right? And Jesus doesn't answer him directly anyways. And I'm coming to a place where I really believe like rebirth requires us to become small, like to actually go into a place where we can re-enter life as we know it a second time. And that smallness is like taking oneself apart a little bit. It's a personal dismantling to make yourself into an embryo small enough to say that this is the thing that's going to enter into the next place. This is DNA that I can take into the next stage of me that I want to become next. So I'm there. That's what I'm thinking about.
Wow. Oh, that's
a lot.
We're diving right into it.
We're diving right in.
So like in what ways can you make yourself small?
So I think personal disruption can look really different for different people. For myself, I know you know this, Doug, like my husband and I just sold our home of 7 years. It's a home that we poured ourselves into, blood, sweat, and tears. And we've moved into a loft in the city. We're living in 800 square feet. And I've given away about 80% of everything I owned, including a large portion of my collection of vintage clothing, which was a really interesting process of divesting myself of stuff. So I think for some people, making yourself small is physically divesting yourself of things. But I think creatively, it's also kind of getting to that radical revision place in your work where you're willing to say, this is what I've been to up until this point, and there's nothing wrong with any of that, but it's not going to take me where I want to go next, and just kind of letting go of some of my own creative ways of doing things, whether I think that's true, whether you're a writer, professional, whatever you are. You just kind of have to get your hands empty before you can receive something new.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't sound too kooky and mystical.
No, not at all. The, uh-huh. the kookier and the mystical, more uh-huh. mystical, the better as far as I'm concerned. So what prompted this?
Thomas and I, that's my husband, Thomas and I have both kind of gotten to a place where we just recognized we were super comfortable. So we were spending time with people who are a lot like us, socioeconomically, in terms of their beliefs, political affiliations, and just people who within our own neighborhood. And it was just time to disrupt. And honestly, it's allowed me to have a really great explosion of creative work. It's allowed him to make a career shift that he'd wanted to make for a long time. So he had 11 years under his belt working as director of sales for a large home builder, and he'll be working for himself now. So that's super exciting too. So those are all big things. Yeah.
It is exciting. And the first thing that comes to mind is the fact that you're doing it together. Mm-hmm. And, there's that conventional wisdom about, couples and one being ready for a change or mm-hmm. growing and mm-hmm. the other being resistant to it. It seems really powerful for both of you at the same time to be saying, okay, well, what is the next version of ourselves?
It's super fun. And I think we're both in a place where we're really interrogating what the other person is doing and asking the other person directly, why are you doing that? Or what are you working toward? Or what's the good that you want to do with your gift? I think that's really where we both are, is really asking like, what is the good for your community and the circle of people around you that can be doing with this gift? So yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, two different directions. One, 7 years. What is it about 7 years? You're in your home for seven
yes.
years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's the 7 year itch, or there's
yes, that's what they say. Yeah.
And I've just seen it in my life that at the 7 year point, things change in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's there. Any ideas?
I have no idea if it's between Thomas and I, and because this is a change that we very much did together. I think I go through this desire to reinvent myself probably much faster than he does. So that happens to me maybe every 2 to 3 years. I'm ready to disrupt everything. And I think he would prefer to do that maybe once every decade. So somewhere in between the two, we've kind of come to a middle place. But yeah, it is supposedly, I think numerologically, it's like the number of completion. I don't know that that's true.
Oh.
You could probably find out. I have no idea.
It's worth researching. Uh-huh. Yeah. And on the creative front, let's talk a little bit about your writing and what you're seeing happening there.
Sure. So I am somebody who I describe myself as a contemplative photographer and a writer. And I always pair those two things together because those two creative acts feed each other. And I'm also somebody who has historically avoided traditional publications. So I've worked hard to try to share my work in ways that worked for me and were comfortable for me, that felt right to me. I share my work by hiding it, or I have in the past. So I love tucking poems into public library books. At some point, if you live in Roanoke long enough, you might find something I've written taped to the bottom of a park bench or a picnic table, or chalked onto a sidewalk, or written on the bottom of a stone by the river. I love sharing work by hiding it, and particularly by making it ephemeral so that it doesn't last very long. That feels very comfortable to me, and I love that. But the other side of that coin is that my work hasn't really happened in conversation with other people. And maybe that's because I'm a coward and I like that privacy. I don't know. But I am at a place where I just want to be able to let some of what I do exist in community with other people and serve other people and highlight the work of other people. So yeah, I'm in a place where I'm really asking myself, Ashley, like, what does it mean to be less of a coward? Like, how could you actually use your gift, maybe do the scary thing and publish some of it in more traditional methods and just get in conversation with others? Does that make sense?
Well, I really respond to that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've talked about this that much, but let me step back too. You have an MFA.
I do.
And so you're used to the process of sharing it with others and getting
feedback
uh-huh. through mm-hmm. the workshop process. Mm-hmm. And so you're used to that. So you're not mm-hmm. scared of that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe how does that align with your creative process? How do you creatively work within that process as opposed to when you're holding it or withholding it?
Well, so if I'm psychologically interrogating why I don't like publication, to be honest with you, some of it's less about that and more about the idea that to me, and this is my own hang up, to me, something that's published is finished, and something that I'm sharing, it's not finished at all. And I love that. And it's not even about me. It doesn't belong to me. As soon as I give it away, it's gone and it belongs to someone else and they can do whatever they want with it. And I love that feeling. I love that feeling. But it does, prevent me from sharing it on wider platforms. And it does prevent me from having those wonderful feedback type conversations with other writers, other creatives, other people. So yeah.
Wow. I just had the same conversation with someone else.
Oh my goodness.
Recently about my own work
wow.
and about publication
okay.
and it not not being done. I get so excited when I read a, and I listen to the New Yorker fiction podcast, and Deborah Treisman will, they'll have a guest on, and she is such, of course, she's such a close reader, but she, before they have a guest on who picks another author's work, she'll go back and research it and read it, of course, and she'll find it in the version that it appeared in the New Yorker, and then she'll find the version in their collected stories, and then go through the revisions
That's so awesome. I love it.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be done, even though it's published.
Yeah.
Which is, and then that, having that, the breadcrumbs of the thought process is really
interesting.
Yeah, it is
interesting. So that's cool.
Maybe I could write a, you know, only one story throughout my life and just keep writing it and publish it.
I love that.
Think people would really do that for me, publish that same story. But
it's
interesting. Yeah. I respond to that as well. Let me pause for just a moment and say that this is Douglas Jackson, and we're at Book City Roanoke. And I am with Ashley Wilson Fellers today. And we're having a conversation about my next chapter, about books and writing and the personal renaissance. And our sponsor for the podcast is Dolores Vestover at Book No Further. And you can visit her at, down on Roanoke's historic city market, and have conversations like this in a local independent bookstore. It happens there. So go in and give it a test. So, Ashley, what are you working on now creatively?
I'm working on a bunch of different things creatively, but I'm working on a series of what I call things that I've been thinking about while I should have been listening to the sermon. So where your mind wanders when you should be listening to something else is kind of an interesting, I don't know, topic of thought for me right now. So I'm doing a series of what I would call almost poems or small meditations, and I'm pairing them with black and white photography, contemplative photography, very much from the natural world. So I'm working on that. And then I'm brainstorming, pulling together a collective of other writers around me who will perhaps on certain given days do exactly what I was talking to you about before, which is share work in public spaces. I think that could be a lot more fun if it weren't just me doing it and we were talking about it. So that's my current creative brainchild, so to speak.
Ooh, can I sign up now?
Where do
I sign up?
You can come talk to me.
I think a lot of people would be interested in that.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, this whole Book City Roanoke thing came, I mean, I'm from exactly the same desire. How do I work creatively in a way that's good for the community? And there's something about writing, and with writers, and there is, or can be, you know, a sense of competition. And you don't see it everywhere, but maybe I'm kind of hyper alert to it.
No, I think that's the thing. But,
a couple of years ago, I continue it now, but had the motto like turn it on its head. Mm-hmm. So if I can feel some sense of, oh, well, they got something published in a really prominent journal or magazine, and I didn't do that, so I'm kind of failing in some way, and I want to go hide under a rock. Why don't I turn it around and celebrate what they're doing?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So Book City Roanoke's really just about celebrating everybody around us,
which it does so well.
We want to do it, and there are other ways to do that as well. So similarly, your collective idea and listing other writers and sharing your work in creative ways, it seems to come from a place of generosity.
Yeah, I think that's where all good writing comes from. So I have this big belief that when writers are really writing well, they disappear from the work because they're tapping into something that's bigger than them, a conversation that's bigger than them, an idea, or even if I could get a little cookie, a presence that's bigger than them. And that's where writing is really what it should be. So yeah, everything that we do to talk about how great we are as writers or to collect our accolades, I think is in resistance to that actually. So yeah, anything we can do to disrupt that is probably a good thing creatively.
That's well said.
Yeah.
Tell me, what is the School of Ordinary Life?
Yes. Yeah, so I am a believer in the School of Ordinary Life. So I'm all about mystery in the ordinary, magic in the quotidian. Everything that I want to do creatively is about finding wonder in ordinary spaces, whether it's the sky in a puddle on the sidewalk, or even a rainbow cloud of oil in that puddle on the sidewalk. To find wonder in ordinary things is really important to me. And I like my writing to be living in a space where I'm inviting other people to see that too. So it doesn't have to be ivory tower or particularly beautiful or polished to find beauty in it, so to speak. So, yeah.
And how does transformation play a role?
Most everything that I've done creatively that I find interesting, whether other people find it interesting is a different question, but that I personally find interesting happened because I was resisting something that was happening to me that was unpleasant. And that continues to be an invitation to me to stay in unpleasant places sometimes, or uncomfortable places might be a better term, and to like kind of push up against that ideologically and explore. And so I think that that's sort of what you might be talking about when you talk about transformation, is staying under kind of the pressure that's on you and saying that this is an invitation to do creative work here and push out against the pressure walls kind of around me, or the ordinary that is getting on your nerves. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And you think about it, I like the way you describe the kind of like within the pressure or within that, within whatever's on top of you. And you think of transformation and chemical processes, or
I like that image.
I've lost my words. I just had it a second ago. The crucible, let's just say the Instapot.
Yeah. I get that. Well, and if you think about it, like creative people really like to think of themselves as disruptors, which is great. I think that's what creative people are, but you can't really be a disruptor in a space that you're super comfortable in, or in kind of a matrix of thought and ideas that are very much like yours. You won't be a disruptor there. You'll just be comfortable. And so I think anytime creatively that you find yourself in a space where you are super comfortable, you probably aren't well positioned to use your gifts at all. So yeah, I think that's where that there's that invitation to disruption. And then tied with that is the awareness that we can train ourselves to have as creative people, to just stay in and live in a place where there is some discomfort and friction around us, because that's exactly where our voice is probably needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. What about as a reader? Mm-hmm. Are there any books that have
been disruptive?
Yeah.
A ton. Probably Walden. When I was, I'm kind of going back to like my 20s, like my grad school years. Walden was huge for me because it was just such an invitation to exactly what we're talking about, to sort of turn certain societal expectations on their head. Whether you believe that Thoreau was genuine in the way he underwent the project that he was undergoing at Walden Pond, I do think there's a real invitation there to live our lives differently and make calm differently and structure ourselves differently so that we can do whatever it is that we believe we were called to do and be with our lives. So that one's huge. Another super disruptive book for me, in a really important way, was Toni Morrison's Beloved. It's on every list that I have for like best American writers, best books written in the last 50 years. Like, it's just such a wonderfully disruptive book. I read it in a period of my life when I was a young adult and a beneficiary of a tremendous amount of privilege, white privilege, just very much ignorant to how uncomfortably alive that chapter of our history was for many people. And so it came to me in a moment when I was just soft enough to receive it and just made a wreckage of me. And so I just absolutely love Morrison's work in general, but that work in particular, I needed that disruption. Mm-hmm. So those are probably my top two. And Jeff Eugenides' Middlesex was a very similar book in that way too. Mm-hmm. So similarly disruptive in terms of gender constructs. So yeah.
Great.
First three that come to mind as disruptive books. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll put a of course, I'll list these books on the link, on the blog post that is associated with this mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'll also put a way that folks can contact you if they're interested the collective.
I would love that. Poetry. I would absolutely love that. I would love for lots of people, including people who don't consider themselves to be writers or poets or artists, to find their own way of participating in that. That would be super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the beautiful things I've seen around Roanoke. There are a lot of ways that people are encouraging others in their mm-hmm. creative mm-hmm. pursuits, whether it's the haiku contest over mm-hmm. with employees at Carillion or projects at the library. There's a lot out there, and we can do even more. If we want to be an innovative, creative city, we can do it. And we can do that by encouraging others.
I love that. Well,
we are right at the time, but I want to get one more little question in. What else are you doing in the community now? You're working at the library.
I work part-time at the public library, city library, and I work at actually a number of different libraries, which has been a really fun bird's eye view of our city and all of its different vibrant, gorgeous, exciting communities and how different they are, and how it's made me super aware of a ton of different aspects of this community that I didn't even know about before. And so I really hope in some of what I'm doing moving forward, I'll do some journalism too. I hope to kind of make people aware of that and get them mixing and mingling in different neighborhoods that aren't their own.
Great. Any tips on people if they want to disrupt their own way of being in the community in conjunction with the libraries?
Well, not just the library, but I would say one of the first cool things that anybody could do is just go outside of your neighborhood and spend some time elsewhere. If you are a Grandin person, go spend some time in the Melrose community or the Williamson Road community. If you're a downtown person, wherever you want to go. And actually, libraries are great places to start. You could literally just sit in a library on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, Sunday in the county where the library's open, and just have a cup of coffee, read a book, and be around people who are not your usual people. That'd be a great way to start if that's all you can do, and then go from there to exploring restaurants and shops and having conversations with people. So yeah, that would all be great.
Great. Well, thank you for this conversation.
You're welcome.
This is Douglas Jackson, and I've been with Ashley Wilson Fellers here on the Book City Roanoke podcast. I want to thank Book No Further, our sponsor, and be sure to join us for our next episode with Cameron Terry of Garden Variety Harvest.